Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be if the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's every Wednesday. Greg Cosell joins us, presented by the Huffaker Group of Keller Williams Realty. Call 833-THG-NASH or visit Huffaker online, THGTN.com. Again, that website, THGTN.com. Greg, how are you?
I've come to play, Jonathan. I'm going to give it 100%, 110%. Not going to leave it in the locker room today.
You're always very consistent with that, and we appreciate that. It seemed like Mariota came to play this past Sunday against the Falcons. He seemed more decisive, more deliberate with where he was going with the ball. What did you notice about the game plan for the Titans quarterback and how he executed some of those throws?
Well, I think it was a perfect mix. I think that their offense has to work a certain way for him to be effective, and those throws were there. I mean, that 55-yard touchdown to start the second possession was a perfect example. They were in the straight-eye formation. It was ISO lead run action. They got exactly what they wanted in the sense that they got the second-level defenders who have both run and pass responsibilities. They put them in conflict. Brown ran a great route against Trufant, and boom, you hit a quick slant into an open void, and then you get run after catch. There were a number of those, and then he got very comfortable in the game, and he made some excellent throws. One that stood out to me, which probably didn't seem like much just watching, but when he hit Humphreys for 9 yards on 3rd and 7 on the second TD drive, it was a quick out, but the ball placement was really precise, and it needed to be. So I thought he sort of got very comfortable. You could see it, and therefore he threw the ball better. And he threw it confidently, and then you could just kind of feel that.
Was there anything different about the offensive approach this week compared to the previous two for him?
I think in a strict sense, they try to do similar things on a weekly basis. It just sometimes those things work and sometimes they don't. When you start off a game, I think it was like, what was the game where the other – big Brown game. Who did they beat?
Cleveland.
Right, right. I mean, when you hit big plays early based on scheme, I think it makes your quarterback feel really comfortable. And that's what happened in this game. And obviously the fade throw to Brown for the second touchdown was a great throw, another outstanding ball placement throw, high to the outside. That's exactly where you want to put it. Great execution of the fade concept. And then they go the first possession of the third quarter. They go with a shot play, and they get exactly what they want. And he hits Brown on the crosser. So the plays they called, they got the reactions of the defense that they were hoping to get. Now, you don't always get that, but they got the reactions that they wanted against a defense that, for the most part, predictable is not the right word, but they're a defense that plays a lot of zone, a lot of cover three, and you pretty much know how people will react in these coverages. And you try to put people in conflict, particularly second-level defenders. And it was really effective, and he got Mariota, with early success, clearly was very comfortable throwing the ball.
Based on what you've seen on tape of A.J. Brown, were you more surprised with his speed to outrun the entire secondary, or more surprised by the lack of speed of everyone in the Falcons secondary to catch him on that play?
It was funny watching him on that touchdown. It looked like everybody wasn't running really fast.
No, it was weird.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know exactly what to say to that. I mean, Brown's not a burner. He's not slow or plodding, but he's certainly not a burner. But, yes, no one really caught him. But watching the tape, I didn't feel like, watching Brown, I went, wow, he's really put it into another gear. It just looked like he was running the way he runs, and nobody caught him.
So when you don't get lots of zone and you don't get lots of cover three, and you don't necessarily have as many chances to put the second-level defenders in conflict, then what? And will you get those things from Buffalo, or you get something entirely different?
Well, Buffalo's a really good defense. They play probably more zone than man, but they play man. One thing that Buffalo does exceptionally well is they play with great fundamental execution. So what you have to try to do is create situations where their fundamental execution can be used against them. Similar concepts. You know, I think back to, and this was a game they lost, but I think back to a 25-yard completion against the Indianapolis Colts to Corey Davis, where it was a hard outside zone run at a shotgun, and Mariota really exaggerated the mesh point, and he caused significant problems for the underneath defenders. So you're trying to take a strength of a defense, which is the fundamental execution with which they play, and cause problems. So that's what you're trying to do. Now, the Bills are tougher to do that against than the Falcons. I would expect, and we'll talk more about this, obviously, but I would expect this not to be a high-scoring game. I guess we have no idea whether Josh Allen is going to go or not. I don't believe he's been ruled out, but I guess I'd be surprised if he goes, but we don't know.
But even if he plays, it's a low-scoring game.
It's still a low-scoring game, correct. So, you know, I would expect the game to play out differently than this game did. So, you know, I would not expect the Titans to run away with it in the first, you know, 20 minutes of the game.
How did you think Nate Davis performed coming off the bench and playing? They wanted to get him some reps. He ended up playing more than Jamil Douglas at right guard.
Right. You know, it's funny. I was checking him out here and there, and I didn't see anything glaringly bad, but I can't sit here and tell you that I charted every play, but I don't recall him necessarily getting beat where I went, ooh, that was tough.
And you would have noted that. The fact that you didn't note anything like that is positive, I would think.
Yeah, although I did, I'm looking at my notes now, and I did make a note that I thought he had a few bad snaps, both in the run game and in pass protection, but not glaringly bad, where it was like, wow, that's just, you know, but just things that they'll work with him on, technique things, you know, bending, things of that nature. But I didn't think he was a problem. He didn't stop their offense from working.
We know Taylor Lewan returns this week. How does Lewan's return change the way they plan their protections? Dumb it down for us and how you expect them to go about Lewan in the lineup versus what we've seen up front from the first four games of the season.
Well, in an ideal world, what you will be able to do is have him in pass protection anyway. But again, they're not necessarily a deep drop passing team, and that's not the way they want to play because that's not what the strength of Mariota is, dropping back deep and scanning the field. But in an ideal world, you're having Taylor Lewan one-on-one block. The best pass rusher on the Bills is Jerry Hughes, who normally lines up on the right side of the defense, the left side of the offense. Now, he'll move from side to side, and I'm sure they'll do that at times in this game to get him matched on Conklin. But for the most part, when you have Taylor Lewan, what you're hoping you can do and be successful is have him one-on-one, which gives you more options with the rest of your offensive line in your pass protection concepts.
How about zone runs to the left? He kind of made fun of me when I asked him about this today, but I would think that goes back to being or starts being kind of the core principle of the offense as we expected it would be when they signed Roger Saffold.
Yeah, and I think they'll do that, and I think they'll probably do the pin-pull concept, which they do anyway, where the pin-pull concept is where you usually take your offensive tackle and he pulls, and that offensive tackle would be Lewan because he's very, very athletic, and he's very good at this, and then he pulls, and then the outside receivers will seal on the inside. In the old days, we called that a crackback, but that's now illegal, so it's more of a seal block, and then you get, ideally, a lot of teams will do that to the boundary because then you end up with Lewan blocking a corner, and corners really don't want much to do with that. So that's a run that you'll probably see, but you'll also see the zone run game to the left with Lewan, a very athletic player.
Sunday, it's the Titans and Bills.
Delaney Walker! Delaney Walker! Touchdown! Titans!
The Titans and the Bills with the Lee Company countdown to kickoff. Sunday at 10 on 104.5 The Zone.
Greg Cosell with us, presented by the Huffaker Group of Keller Williams Realty. Online, thgtn.com. thgtn.com.
Sharif Finch was a healthy scratch in this game, which surprised all of us.
Yeah, I saw that. They played Gilbert, 93.
Yeah, what did you think of Gilbert? What did you think of Correa?
If you want the honest truth, neither one stood out to me one way or the other. I thought that their defense actually played really well, but neither guy stood out to me. I didn't really take note. I know what Mike Vrabel said. I'm not there every day, so I don't know what goes on at practice. But
what have you thought of Finch through three games?
I thought he was okay. Another guy that didn't stand out to me either way. Guys like that, PK, and I'm just being honest, when I watch a game, I truly cannot watch all 11 players on every play and chart each guy.
That's unacceptable, Greg.
Yeah.
So, I tend to look at schemes and I notice particular players that interest me. I always take a look at Evans. I always take a look at the secondary because I really like their secondary. I always notice what Dean Pease does, and I think he does a really good job, and I think he did it again this week, a really good job with him moving people around and late movement and disguise elements and getting the quarterback to hold the ball a little longer. I think that'll be a big issue in this week's game, no matter who the quarterback is for the Bills.
I wrote a piece today about their disguising and how good they are at disguising.
They're really good at that.
One play that I was told to look at was the fourth and one, where Ryan was looking to Sanu in the flat on the right. He wasn't there. He missed Ridley over the middle. He ended up flushed to his left by Daquan Jones, and then he got sacked in a gang tackle. Sanu motioned all the way from the right all the way to the left guard. Then Ryan signaled him and he motioned back. And at the snap, he was behind the right tackle. And then he kind of slanted into the flat where Dory Jackson was ready to pounce. He wasn't available. But why did Ryan think that was going to be man coverage? Is he just convinced it's man coverage on fourth and one when nobody came with Sanu on any of that motion?
Yeah, and I can't remember the exact specifics of the play, but normally on fourth and one, you'd be playing man. That would be the high percentage play. And by the way, defenses now, just like offenses, PK, try to manipulate with motions and shifts, defenses now do the same thing. So for years and years, if someone ran across the formation with a receiver, the assumption was it was man. If no one ran across the formation with a receiver in motion, the assumption automatically was that it was zone. Though the defense now is changing that up because they want to manipulate the offense. So those things are not automatic anymore. But there are downs that are high tendency man-to-man downs, and they're usually shorter yardage situations. So let's say it's third and four or less. That's a high percentage man-to-man down. Fourth and one would be viewed without question as a man-to-man down. So when you're making a play call, you're thinking you're getting man coverage.
Greg, let's discuss the Bills defense for a moment. They are very good. We know that. And they force an opponent to go three and out nearly a third of the time that they take the field. What leads to their success? Where do you start describing why they're so strong?
Well, I think, number one, they're really fundamentally sound. And when I say that, that means they don't make mistakes in terms of gap integrity in the run game. They don't break down in coverage. I think what they do from a coverage perspective really, really well, and Sean McDermott's always been good at this, is they do a lot of late movement in their zone concepts to blur the coverage lines and make the quarterback do some thinking after the snap of the ball. Now, that worked very effectively this week against Brady. But that's what they do really well. So you get into that situation where you're not exactly certain what the coverage is as you're dropping back. And that'll be a factor in this game because think about the good throws that Mariota's had this year. For the most part, I bet there's a high percentage where it's been plant and throw, where the play has been defined and the ball can come out within the rhythm and timing of the play call. That's when Mariota is at his best. Now, theoretically, any quarterback should be at his best, but Mariota is clearly at his best when that happens, when they can manipulate the defense. And this is a tougher defense to manipulate. They move people around a lot just before the snap and after the snap, and they give you different looks that take away what you do well.
And whenever the opponent wants to run the football, Buffalo's defense through the first month of the season, they're ranked 7th against the run, and on 17% of the opponent carries, the Bills stopped the running back for a loss. So where are they the strongest up front? And let's just go through a couple of players up front on that defensive front, and maybe mention Ed Oliver in all of this, one of the new acquisitions through the draft.
Who, by the way, has not played that great. Jordan Phillips has actually played better than Ed Oliver. Jordan Phillips is a third or fourth year player. I believe he came from Oklahoma State originally, I believe drafted by the Dolphins. Really a big, big man who's got really light feet. But Oliver's not played overly well through the first four games. But the guy who's really made meaningful improvements from his rookie year to his second year is the linebacker Edmonds. And he's really, he's 6'5", he's 250, he's a big-time athlete, he's a much, much better player this year, and he is a load because he's big and he can run and he can move. So and the other player who I really like on their defense is Matt Milano, the other linebacker. They're predominantly the stacked linebackers in their defense, and Matt Milano kind of played a hybrid safety linebacker position in college at Boston College, and now he's a linebacker and he can run. He matches up to tight ends. He's very good at that. So their two stacked linebackers are really, really athletic, and they can avoid blocks without giving up their gaps, and they make a ton of plays in the box.
One of the storylines throughout this week will be who plays quarterback for Buffalo, given the injury to Josh Allen. We don't know that answer yet. But I wonder, based on the way their offense is built, Allen so far, from what I've seen, Greg, has put the ball in harm's way too often. He's taken some chances with some bad decisions.
Yep.
Barkley, I'm assuming, would play a more careful game, and that may actually help them in this matchup.
Well, my guess is they'll go into this matchup believing that it won't be a high-scoring game.
Right.
And I don't think they'll ask Barkley to do too much. He's not overly capable of doing too much. He's a limited thrower. There is he's another timing rhythm player. That's when he's at his best. Every once in a while, he'll move around, but there are limitations to what he can do. Frank Gore still runs the ball well. Their O-line is solid, not great. They rotate at right tackle with the rookie from Oklahoma, Cody Ford, and a veteran, Ty Nesecki, who's been in the league for quite some time. So they obviously don't feel real comfortable at right tackle with one over the other. They run the power scheme really, really well. Gore's been doing that his whole career, going back to his San Francisco days, so you'll see that for sure. That's what they do. And I think they'll probably try to be in a game where they don't turn it over, and if they have to punt, they'll be comfortable doing that. If Josh Allen were to play, you know, he's a little bit of a wild stallion still. He can make great secondary action plays, and he can make really poor secondary action plays, and his accuracy is week to week. You don't know what you're going to get.
Frank Gore continues to defy logic when you see him run the way he does at his age. What is allowing the success we're seeing, but beyond just having an exceptional career, Greg? We know he's a very good player. What really starts their run game? Why is he having success at age 36?
Well, if you look at his traits, let's start there, and he's done this his whole career. Patience, vision, and the ability to get through small cracks, small creases at the point of attack. That's what he's been about through his career. So he's never been an explosive guy who's necessarily going to, you know, hit a crease and go 70 yards for a touchdown. But he has an uncanny ability with his patience, with his vision, his feel for what's in front of him with the blocking scheme, and then that knack just to sort of get through, you know, kind of make himself skinny, which is a term you hear a lot, make himself skinny and get through those small creases, which are hard to do without losing your balance. And that's what he's made a career of, and he can still do that. I mean, he did that exceptionally well this past week against the Patriots, and the Patriots have a really good defense.
I know you don't have notes on this sort of thing. This is more a gut feel question. You could have one of these rosters for its talent. Which one do you take?
You mean which roster is more talented?
Yeah.
Well, I think if you're looking at pure talent, you'd probably say that Titans defense probably has more talent overall. Although I would say that Tre'Davious White, they use him at times, and this helps their overall defense. They will allow him to lock up man-to-man on whatever. Normally he plays the left side. They don't always travel him, and I don't know if they will this week. But even if he stays on the left, often they'll just let him line up and play man and then do other things with their coverage. But I think the Titans maybe overall have more defensive talent from top to bottom. Offensively, they probably have a little more talent as well. I mean, you know, I'm not sure that it's a highly talented roster for the Bills on offense.
A couple of hits on the way out here, Greg. Did we see the best of Malcolm Butler this past week in Atlanta?
I thought he played really, really well. I mean, there's a guy who stood out to me. You know, I didn't go into the game saying I'm going to study Malcolm Butler, but just as the game progressed and I started watching the coverage, just because Matt Ryan, they threw the ball, as you know, so many times.
50 times, yeah.
Yeah, I think overall with the sacks and a few Ryan runs there, I think were 60 dropbacks. So they obviously dropped back a lot. But I thought Malcolm Butler played really well. The other thing that stood out to me was the use of Vaccaro as a pass rusher. Because now in their dime, he plays up near the line of scrimmage, and they had a lot of pressures where he was the fourth rusher, what we call a zone exchange, where he's the fourth rusher and they played zone behind it. And he's a very versatile player. And I think playing dime with Hooker predominantly playing on the back end gives Vaccaro a lot of versatility within their scheme.
It's interesting because I think whenever we saw the draft, we thought Hooker would be that player that you're describing in Vaccaro, right? Like it was, to me, the roles were reversed.
Yeah, but he's not explosive enough an athlete for that. I mean, because the one thing about Hooker is, even in college, he's very savvy, very smart, very aware, good play recognition, understanding of what he's looking at, but not an explosive athlete.
And Jarrell Casey, when matched up on James Carpenter, I felt like Casey had a great matchup. And then as they were injured on the offensive line, Atlanta started to slide protections. And to me, that's where Casey's at his best, when he can jump those snaps and use leverage to his advantage. Did you see the dominant Jarrell Casey in this matchup?
Yeah, and they don't have a very good offensive line. And you know, I think that was a matchup they had to win, and they won, even in the run game. You know, they just dominated in the run game. And I'll tell you what stands out to me, and again, you guys are at practice, but I think the Titans have a pretty deep defensive line. A lot of guys play significant snaps. Most of them flash at times, even the guys who don't play a ton of snaps. You know, Mac flashes, Urban flashes, guys flash. So this is a pretty deep defensive line. Now, I know it's only Wednesday, but what's Wake's status at this point?
He's not practicing today. Hamstring.
Oh, hamstrings can be, he could be out for, you know, a week, because you don't want to lose him for the season or for 6-8 weeks. I think they have a pretty deep D line. And I think that, you know, I talked about Edmonds from Buffalo. I think Evans is a really improved player. And now they use him in so many ways, which tells me that they see him as a guy who can handle a number of different things, because they don't ask guys to do what, coaches don't ask guys to do what they can't trust them to do. So I think Evans is now sort of playing up to his draft status and to his athletic ability.
Greg, we love having you on. The only thing we hate about it is how fast these segments fly by for us. Final thing on the way out, non-Titans or Bills related. How did Tampa Bay put up 55 on the Rams defense?
Oh, that's an easy answer. The Rams, I never rip coaches, you know that, but here's what the Rams did. They played very soft zone coverage. They allowed Jameis Winston to hit his back foot and deliver the football. They did not disrupt any receivers. Therefore, their pass rush became a non-factor, and Jameis could hit his back foot and deliver the football to receivers who were essentially running relatively free. It was like 7-on-7 where the quarterback had the red jersey on.
Wow. That's the first time I've ever heard you describe the Rams defense like that.
Again, I'm not, you know, like I said, I'm telling you what the tape showed. That's all I'm telling you. You know, Wade Phillips has been doing this a long time. He's a lot smarter than I am, but that's what the tape showed.
What's the top matchup on NFL matchup this week for you?
Well, Titans Bills are in the show. I'm doing a
Mario. Wow, is this the first time of the year?
You gotta pump it up for the next. I'm doing a piece on Mariota.
Okay.
Showing the two plays I mentioned, the Davis play against the Colts and the Brown touchdown this week, because they're similar stylistically in how they attacked the defense to exploit the run-pass conflict of second-level defenders.
We look forward to seeing that.
Thank you, Greg.
All right, guys. Appreciate it.
Greg Cosell. Follow him on Twitter, @GregCosell.